You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We really appreciate you stopping by. We hope you have a good time. If you do, go ahead and subscribe to the show on iTunes. It'll come to you every week. You can also leave us a rating and a comment, and that way other people can find the show more easily. My name is Drew. Joining me, as always, is the Major Tom to my ground control, my dear friend, Andy.
I just took my protein pills, and I'm going about to put my helmet on.
Well, you do look like, you know, you've been beefing up.
I have been. I'm setting off for a space journey.
Have you ever taken the powdered whey, the protein powder or anything? Have you ever bulked up?
Andy? I have taken a lot of Citracel fiber additives, so I wouldn't recommend
for
that.
For regularity?
Yeah, I don't need that. It turns out that was a bad diagnosis, and it really fucked me up. So
what does
I don't
it
recommend it.
What does it turn, like, is make your stool thicker somehow? What's the effect?
It just puts more fiber in your diet. So yeah, I guess it's they try and make you poop better with it. I don't know.
Yeah, I find I prefer a nice hard, firm poop.
This is not the way we want to start this episode.
I think it is. I mean, what most people don't know is that this always happens at the end of the night. So it feels like we haven't talked about disgusting things yet, but this is the first thing people are hearing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, eat fiber and eat protein to have a healthy life and don't think about the consequences.
I just say stay away from that Citracel until you absolutely need it.
Be careful. Well, our silent partner, Nate, is sort of like the Citracel of our little operation here. He's making the sound happen, keeping us regular and making it sound great. Andy, our guests this week are from the Portland-based band, The Secret Drum Band.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Really excited to have them on the show. It's a kind of music that, of all the different kinds of genres we've featured, we haven't ever had a true percussive composition band like they are. We had Lisa and Alan here. Lisa was kind of the founding member of this project, and it's taken on a number of iterations, and we talk about that kind of evolution. But we also just get to listen to a different kind of music that I think a lot of people don't encounter, which is really great.
Yeah, and we played, in my opinion, a pretty solid game of License Plate Detective.
It was a good game. Alan is a linguist, so he had a different perspective to bring to the art of license plate detection. So I think we actually scored a win with that one this week.
We'll see what our listeners think.
Yeah. So we're hoping you have a great time with Secret Drum Band as much as we did. We're going to kick off the episode with a little bit of their music here so you can get a flavor. And then enjoy our conversation and our episode with them this week on Hot Garbage.
I'm glad we got ahead of this whole situation. I knew this was going to happen, so I preemptively emailed the NFL and said we would not be taking part in the halftime show. They probably weren't going to ask us, but I just want to put that out there.
We should probably tell them, too, that we're not performing all.
Yeah. Who? Just preemptively.
NFL, we should tell them that we won't play at halftime.
Don't even fucking ask us.
Ask a different percussion ensemble.
Ask a different drum ensemble, because it's not going to be us bust guys.
Not going.
Busters.
Yeah.
So, Lisa, from everything that I read about Secret Drum Band, it's kind of like you're the driving force, the kind of the founding member of that project.
Yeah.
So do you now rule like a tyrant over the project at all times?
No. Alan has become more of a co-director. I guess in the end, if I really am opposed to something or really want to do something, like I, you know.
Yeah, she puts her foot down.
I can put my foot down. And also what I've do is like I travel a lot, and so sometimes I'll make like a new version of the band, like sometimes under a different name or something in different ways, or perform the music in different forms, because the music that we perform like extends into my like broader like practice, I guess you could say. But yeah, Alan and I run the band together, and it feels really good to do that.
Yeah. I like it. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about it being kind of an extension of your kind of your practice, as you meant, as you put it. I know. Are you talking about just in terms of being a composer? Like, how is it connected to kind of other creative outlets in your life?
I have a background in like environmental studies and ecology and field biology, and particular like a lot of work with insects. And so I do like field research, and then I base my compositions, or a lot of my compositions, on that field research. And so that field research is sometimes like broader, like sometimes there's writing or collaboration with other people, and there's like this like broader like topic around the music. And so that like, so the music exists in that realm, and then it exists in the realm of Secret Drum Band too, because we perform it and we record it. And so that, you know, it's like, yeah, like, does that make sense?
It makes a little bit of sense.
So do you know a lot about insects in like the Oregon region? Specifically, or is it other?
I know somewhat about the Oregon region.
Are there
Oregon
any gnarly bugs we should know about that
gnarly
people
bugs
don't know about?
Well, there's, you should know about bumblebees. There's a bumblebee that is endangered that's in Mountain Hood National Forest.
Oh, okay.
That's, and the Xerxes Society is like on top of that, and they have a lot of citizen science. They have a citizen science campaign to get, if you want to learn more, get involved. But
what's
the
species of bee? What's it called?
It's called honestly, it's like totally escaping my brain now which bumblebee it is.
Is it a big one, big fuzzy kind?
Yeah, it's like they're all like big and fuzzy, right? But like the Xerxes has this guide, and like they have different combinations of stripes of colors, you know, and some of like a little orange or yellow or white, black. And so there's this like, and that's how you tell them apart for the most part.
I got you. Okay.
But anyways, I know more about insects in the tropics, actually, which is kind of like funny I don't.
That's an important
live there.
Place to know about insects, though.
Yeah.
Like that's where the insects are.
Because
really.
That's where I got excited about them, was in the tropics. That's where I first really got excited about them. So I've done work in Costa Rica and Hawaii and Brazil. And but yeah, I could explain that a little bit better.
Asked if it made sense what you were saying, I sort of see the connection. Well, I can see the connection between being inspired by the themes you encounter in nature and through your biological field work, and kind of what you're trying to represent percussively in your compositions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you're like someone out there who is not really a musician or a biologist, mm-hmm. when you say that they're connected, how do you see them as connected? What does in being inspired by nature mean specifically for Secret Drum Band? How are they connected, like, literally?
For me, I see a lot of the music I write, or most of the music I write, as a way to bring attention to specific environmental topics. So like I did a project about endangered bees in Hawaii and listened to sounds in their habitats, and then wrote songs based on the sounds in their habitats, and maybe also like movement that I saw. And then because I'd written these pieces of music and we did a book, there was like all these events that came along with that and performances for example, all of Secret Drum Band shows where we've played it, and then I get to talk about that topic, you know. And it got attention in the first place because they're like, whoa, someone wrote songs about these endangered bees, you know. And so it brings more attention than someone just merely like talking about bees. So it's like making art about a specific environmental topic is how I try and like bring attention and encourage, inspire conversation and curiosity about these things. So that's how it's connected for me. And then the music is informed a lot by like observations that are site specific. So
that's awesome. Well, we should probably hear some. Did you guys bring some songs this evening?
We brought songs. Yeah.
We brought songs, other
not of our.
Ours was on the internet. If you want us to play one of ours.
What we'll do is, you know, we'll do a little intro. We'll play a little of you guys' stuff right before the interview starts so people can get a little flavor for it.
Yeah.
But we should still listen to some music. What's the first one you'd like to kick us off with tonight?
We were talking about that. Oh, of other music that we're into. Oh, cool.
Yeah, you know,
So I brought actually three bands. Oh. And we don't have to play them, of course, but just to have a little bit of choice.
Let's describe them all and name them, and then the one that doesn't get played will know that it's your least favorite.
Shit.
Yeah, I'm just
kidding. So there's this band that we just played with. Good friend of mine, Meredith Drums, and they're called E, and it's spelled I-E. Not I-E as in this is, like the, you know, the abbreviation in text or whatever.
Yeah.
But just capital I, capital E. So it's E. They're like, they're a drone band. And I've been listening to their tape like nonstop since I got it in the summer. It's like one of my favorite albums this year or last year. So yeah, I brought a track. Actually, I brought two of their tracks and we can decide which one. And then I brought a Dear Nora track. Do you guys?
I don't know Dear Nora.
Dear Nora's from, she's from Portland, but she relocated to Joshua Tree now. So she's there.
Yeah, her name's Katie Davidson. Played under the name Key Losers also. And right now is Skull's Example.
Yeah, weird.
The Skull's Example is her album.
Yeah, Skull's Example is the album.
The album
was,
title.
What was that name? It was weird. I don't know. We forget. Anyway, Dear Nora is her main project, right? Mm-hmm. From way back. I think she was recording in like the early aughts, maybe before that. Maybe
yeah,
in the 90s.
Yeah, maybe in the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, she recorded a record, came out last year. It's great. Well, last year, I think.
Let's check out some E, because I'm way into that spelling. Fantastic. And that sound, and I'm very curious about what that band might sound like. So,
okay.
They're from Minneapolis.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
Oh, right. I failed to mention that. Yeah, they were on tour for like a week and a half, and we had the pleasure of playing two shows with them, one of them at Mississippi Studios and one of them at
Settle Lodge,
like out near
which
Sisters,
is
Oregon.
Really cool venue.
Wow.
It's beautiful.
That's cool.
Right on the lake. It was great.
Which song would you like to play?
Moonshot.
Moonshot. Yeah, sounds great. Yeah. All right. Let's check it out.
It's a long range show.
That was Moonshot by E, spelled I-E for all of you looking them up. Mm-hmm. Andy, I was told that I should always say the name of the track afterward. Because
that's a good move.
People like to know what they just heard.
And what's the album called again?
Let's get professional.
The album's called Poem, spelled P-O-M-E.
Yeah, and it's out from a Minneapolis label called Moonglyph.
Moonglyph. Ooh, Moonshot, Moonglyph. Yeah. That's right.
So, Alan, where did you come into the picture with Secret Drum Band? What's your origin story here?
My origin story? Where did I come in with?
I guess your origin story
you get
into the band.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for them to grow in to be
What injustice did you witness as a child that informed your
bad
heroism?
Sax playing? What's bad that? Sax playing was the injustice that I witnessed, and I sought to write it through my own playing.
The very specific. That's a very specific superpower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Where do I come from? I grew up in Sacramento, California, and jumping forward to my fourth band or something. '96, I helped form the band called Chick Chick Chick, like the 3! band. Mm-hmm. And that's a band that I was just talking to you before about that. Everyone moved to New York, and they're still playing. I left the band to be more of a homebody, go to school, have friends in Portland. That kind of thing. It was really hard. We had a pretty grueling tour schedule, and I was just gone so much. And I have a daughter, so I just, it was kind of crazy.
Chick Chick Chick, that band is such like a high energy, like it makes you move. I got to imagine you had some amazing early like house party shows.
Oh yeah,
we're just freaking out.
Yep, garages, basements, house parties. Yeah, yeah, not so much later, but mm-hmm. Yeah. Really fun. But then I had started playing with Secret Gem Band mm-hmm. before I quit. Chick Chick Chick.
Yeah, you were like
2012 or 2013, I think.
Yeah, you joined. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you played in like when we were performing this big 45-minute piece called Mount Hood.
Right.
You joined. Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So PDX Pop Now.
Yeah.
Is that the show? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met Lisa in 2012, and we start playing music together.
Yeah, and we, Alan was playing in Secret Drum Band, and there's been like a continually rotating cast, so he joined. And then around the same time, we got this opportunity to bring Secret Drum Band to Joshua Tree and do this residency on this woman, this artist, Andrea Zattel's land. And instead of bringing like straight up Secret Drum Band, I opted instead to do like a more like multimedia thing and just have it be its own thing. Like we're just going to make a new thing. And so Alan and this woman, Heather Treadway, we were the three musicians, mm-hmm. the three main musicians in that project. And so that kind of became a new band.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Like kind of an offshoot, but independent from Secret Drum Band. Secret Drum Band at that point was Lisa's thing entirely. She wrote all the compositions for it, and they were all site specific and tied to her, like the entomological practice, would you say? Like
yeah, the environmental.
The environmental, yeah. So then we had this band that was just the three of us that we were writing the songs all together mostly, or, you know, some. Mm-hmm. It was kind of shared. Shared songwriting, but then at some point
it's called Hits.
Yeah, we were called Hits. There's another band, or maybe a couple other bands called Hits. So that
I was gonna say it's a strong problems. Name. That's it pretty. Good. It's pretty solid. It gets you.
We put out a release. We have a cassette, like full length mm-hmm. album on cassette, EP on cassette, and so we ended up. Heather at the time was in Secret Drum Band as well, so we'd have like in 1 week we might have a Secret Drum Band practice where the three of us and three other people were present, and then we go and have Hits practice, and we're working mm-hmm. on like separate things. And then they were just like invited me to breakfast one day and sat me down at our favorite diner, which no longer exists, the Overlook, and they were like, Lisa, can we just have one band where we all play drums all the time?
Because it was just two drum bands. One of them was perfectly nested within the other one. We're like, we're just the same people.
You really, with being a drum band, though, you kind of do have to literally create your own scene. So it's better if you can just, you know, do a full bill with the same six people.
That's true.
You're like, when you're putting kindling on the drum band
no
fire.
There's no way. We would have had to have two full rehearsals, you know, build ups to the show. I mean, we would have just been practicing all the time if we did that.
Because there was a different setup for the two bands.
Yeah, it's like, it was a pain in the ass.
There were three drummers in one and five in the other.
Yeah.
And so what's happened now is we kind of
took up that many drummers on a stage.
We make it work. I don't know.
But now Secret Drumband has absorbed all of the hits catalog.
We just absorbed, and so Secret Drumband plays the stuff that we wrote in the desert and all the collaborative stuff that we did.
So yeah, wow. I'm interested in this split, because obviously it's one band now, one project instead of two. But when you guys were back doing it as two separate things, again, I'm thinking of someone who is, you know, shows up to a show every once in a while, listens to the radio, that kind of person may not really understand how you can make an entirely different sound out of just the percussive stuff. Huh. So how did you guys think about them as separate projects? What were the key differences between one all percussion band and the other all percussion band?
The songs sounded really different.
They're really different. There was a much more of a, like, kind of a four on the floor electronic feel for hits. Mm-hmm. Or I think that Lisa was more, you were much more open to using like drum samples, and that's when we started writing songs on the computer. We used Ableton to write the songs, because that's what I was using in Chick to Chick, and in my own stuff was Ableton. So then we started using that, and that just brought a whole different kind of feel. So yeah, those are the songs that Lisa likes to call the dance numbers, like the ones there, because we have a, like,
those hot dance numbers.
Yeah, well, I mean, they kind of are. Mm-hmm.
Five drums of disco beat, just a lot of hi-hat.
Whoa,
I like it. I like
that. Would be kind of cool for 30 seconds.
30 seconds, yeah. Awesome. They would be like just out of phase, the hi-hats. So it'd be kind
actually,
of
it's funny
washed
you say
out
that.
Steve
disco.
Is in a hi-hat.
I was in a band called Hi-Hat Attack. That was, it was
what?
Three. Yeah, it was two of us. We were the core members, but then we would invite other drummers to come play with us, but they had to play a hi-hat. That's everyone played hi-hats.
We do have a percussion band scene.
Well, this is in Sacramento.
I know,
we
had to reunite.
This is 90s Sacramento.
The scene stretches two states.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, you have to broaden the geographical region.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, East, West Coast, Best Coast.
West Coast, yeah.
Well, Andy, I know you've got some songs on the docket tonight. What's the first one you'd like to play for us today?
We
got to
keep it on the experimental drum band. Tip. This is a band that I love that doesn't play very many shows, but is playing a show coming up.
They're from Portland?
Yes. Portland band you probably know called Hot Victory.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard of them.
Yeah.
Hot Victory is Caitlin Love and Ben Stoller, and it's just amazing what they can do. They play with a kind of a connected drum set, and they have synthesizers and like samples all on triggers, and they play stuff that a lot of times doesn't even sound like they're playing drums. It's amazing.
Oh, so it's just two drummers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In their early years, they had like another person for a little bit who was doing like some of the sampling and stuff, but they eventually just like streamlined
it
and were like, let's do exactly what we want to do. And
that's like, we're slowly doing the same thing, I feel like.
Hot Victory is another one of those band names that I like, because you can, with that name, you can do like any kind of music you want, and
oh,
it fits.
That's true.
It's pretty flexible for a name.
It's not like, like Blessed Sepulchre or something.
But Secret Drum Brand, I could picture it being like a string quartet, and I would be like, oh yeah, I get it. But you're right, it doesn't have as much range as like Hot Victory.
Yeah.
So the Hot Victory, you can check them out February 11th at Mississippi Studios playing with Macho Boys.
Wonderful. What's the name of this track?
This is a track off of their album Echo Terrere that came out in 2016. And this song is called, let me see if I can nail this, Primavo Saltus. We'll be right back.
That was Hot Victory. It was excellent.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Make sure you check out that show because they don't play a lot of shows, and I really want them. Hopefully that means they're working on new music.
Yeah, February 11th at Mississippi Studios.
Yeah.
Awesome. So since we've got some percussion experts, I want to know, what are some of your like favorite drummers and like drum sounds in like rock and roll?
In rock and roll.
Well, you know, it could be anything. You can blow our minds, but I'm just thinking of like, you know, when you think of, man, some great drummers, who are your favorites?
In terms of performance, oh God, why am I drawing a blank? There's just so many good ones.
I love that drumming in Can.
Oh, yeah.
It's really hard for me to mimic the
Jackie or Yucky Leapside. I was just looking at a picture of him. I posted he died 2 years ago this month, and I was just looking back through my Instagram, and I saw that I'd posted a little RIP to him. Yeah, he's great. I always love Mitch Mitchell. I always go back to him.
I was looking up this very topic, and I really like the drums on Let's Dance, David Bowie.
Mm.
And I was like, who played drums on that? And I had to really dig to find out.
Wait, hold on. Dude. It's Tony yes. Williams.
It was Tony Thompson.
Tony Thompson, not Tony
Thompson.
Williams.
Yeah, Tony Thompson. The drummer from Chic.
Right, drummer from Chic, and also Power Station.
And Power Station,
yeah.
And it makes a lot of sense because Nile Rodgers produced that album.
Yeah.
So there was that connection.
Yeah.
Another thing I found out about that song that I didn't know was that Stevie Ray Vaughan played the guitar solo on that.
Yep. Yeah, his, like, Stevie's
first
on that.
Breaks.
Yep.
Like David Bowie had seen him at like Monterey Jazz.
Yeah, he does the solo, like the outro solo.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
A drum sound that I've been really into this week is Ringo on Something by the Beatles.
Oh,
this,
yeah.
Like,
yeah,
dry drum sound. And it's so simple. And the beat is just like, choom.
No, it's beautiful.
Ka, choom.
Mm hmm.
Ka.
It's all
dum 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 dum.
It's a chunky.
I've always loved his like quote unquote solo during the end or whatever. I love the Tom sounds on
the
song end
the
of
end?
Abbey Road. Yeah, whatever he does right before they do their guitar. Do 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 do.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know, 8 measures maybe of solo.
Yeah. That is a good one.
I always thought Bob Marley had a fucking solid rhythm section.
Dude, that band is fantastic.
His name
is best.
Whalers Carlton
are amazing.
Burnett. What? Not that. What's his name? Yeah, Carlton Barrett. And his brother was the bass player. His name was Family Man Barrett. That's the dopest nickname. Somebody calls you Family Man.
Yeah. There's like the drummer for, the bassist for Roots Radix in the Scientist Band is Flabba Holt.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, Flabba.
That's a strong one.
Yeah.
And for a bass player, too, man.
Yeah.
Flab.
You kind of want, like, a little flab in your, you know? You want it to be a fat sound.
If you could pick
a,
your own nickname, what would you pick?
Me?
Your own music name, you know?
Oh, boy.
I do like Flabba.
If the members of Secret Drum Band had to have, like, alter ego names.
Well, let me tell you my nickname in Chick Chick Chick, and maybe this will give you a little insight. It was Little Bitch. Because there was
self-chosen.
A guy. No,
Lil B.
Not. There was a big bitch, and I was a little bitch.
Nice.
I'd probably
go with Fava Bean.
Ooh, I like that.
I think that's a real dope moniker.
Fava Bean?
Yeah,
okay. I don't know what I would go with.
I don't know what I would be.
Yeah.
Crunch Bucket.
Who else? God, there's gotta be
You know what drum sound I used to like, but now I cringe at? I used to love that like 90s punk rock, like piccolo snare,
ooh,
that really poppy.
Oh, I used to own one of those.
Yeah.
Cannot.
I can't handle it anymore. But I used to like it.
Like Saint Anger, like era Metallica.
Oh, yeah. Saint Anger sounds terrible.
Well, it does, but I mean, is that the snare sound that you're talking about? Like the kind of septic death, like pew, like just like.
Yes.
Boom,
yeah. It's
boom.
Like, yeah, something way too tight.
Yeah,
just and no like depth
like
to
how
it.
Is this not breaking every time?
Right,
they hit the snare.
I'm just like it sounds like it's just like the drumstick could just pop out of their hand because it's like
it does. It's a mess. They have like 100 drumsticks when they play that song. I go, oh shit, he's playing that drum.
You do make fun of my 311 love, but I do love Chad Sexton from 311. He's an excellent drummer.
Well, it's true. I've always said your color is amber.
And if you want to
energy, you do give off an amber energy glow.
If you want to talk about my, that's as close as I get to reggae and dub is fucking 311.
Whoa.
Dude, that's bad reggae though.
Oh, I know. I'm not making an argument for it. I'm just saying
like
for like 6 albums, I really liked 311.
Hmm.
Yeah. Do you like Sublime though?
No, I don't like Sublime.
How about Slightly Stupid?
I don't know Slightly Stupid.
We almost opened for them once, remember?
Oh, yeah. Wait, in like Ashland or something?
Yeah. That's gig right. Didn't come through.
They're in that same realm.
Well, we make fun of them all the time, but they do listen to the show regularly. So yeah. I don't think it's a bad thing.
I thought of two more drummers.
Can Let's kick it.
Going back a couple decades, I was trying to think of more recent drummers, but I guess I'm stuck in the past. I love the drummers for XTC and for The Attractions, Elvis Costello's band.
Oh, okay.
The drummers are amazing. Mm-hmm.
I've seen a drummer recently that I really love, David King. He plays in the Bad Plus.
Yeah.
And he's so good. This is more like jazz kind of.
We played with Jim White. He was amazing.
Oh, Jim White.
Oh, my God.
Shit. Yeah, we played with the...
Zyloris White.
Yes. That was... God, that was so cool to see him play. Yeah.
Well, Lisa, I read that you have been playing drums since you were 9 years old.
Yeah.
So what was it that got you started playing that instrument?
I knew I wanted to play music. And then when I had the opportunity to join the school band in fourth grade, I knew I wanted to be in it. And I wanted to play saxophone, actually, but all the...
That's what I played. I played sixth grade band.
But the saxophones were all taken by the time it was my turn to pick an instrument. So the teacher was like, how about drums? And it felt good from the second I started. So that's how
that's such a constructive band leader, because I had a saxophone. It was my uncle's old saxophone, so I really wanted to play it. But I had a tough time at first with the reed, you know, getting the sound out. And before you figure it out, it's a little tricky.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And instead of pushing me toward drums, which would have been awesome, he was like, why don't you play the tuba? Whoa. Or the trombone.
That's harder.
Wasn't that even more difficult?
I'm not doing that.
Harder, like the nozzle.
Why don't you play the French horn?
Exactly. Yeah, he was just looking at his roster and had no tuba players.
This is exactly what happened to me. I was playing saxophone in like sixth grade band, and they're like, you're not very good at it. You're not progressing as well as the other students. Here's a baritone sax or a baritone tuba.
So
I was just like, oh, cool. And then I got kicked out of band because I would sneak up behind people and just go. And I got sick of that joke really quick.
You made lemonade out of your tuba lemons.
I loved it. I loved having that little mini tuba. It was great.
But yeah, you got pushed toward the right answer.
It was great.
It was just choice or a chance.
Just chance.
It was just we need another drummer, and maybe they needed another.
Yeah. They definitely did need another tuba and trombone player, so I get it.
And I'm really glad. And the teacher who put drumsticks in my hand for the first time, I was writing thank yous for our album and was like, whatever happened to Mr. Corwin? And found him online and emailed him and reconnected with him, and he came to our show last year at the Museum of Natural History. And that was so cool.
And then he arrived.
Yeah,
that was awesome. Yeah, I remember.
That's kind of a crazy day. You were playing a show at the Museum of Natural History.
Your parents were there too,
right? Under that whale, and your first.
My
drum
parents
teacher
were there, and my first drum teacher, my first music teacher.
That sounds like a dream. Was there?
It does sound like a dream. Like,
and then I looked down and I forgot to put my pants on.
That's like the end of Mr. Holland's Opus.
And we were like, and that big blue whale was in the other room. And I was like, what do we do after this? We'll go home and play in Mississippi Studio.
Yeah, that shithole. No, I'm just kidding.
Not that I don't appreciate that venue.
We played there and it was great. We just played there.
And it was amazing. We just played a really great show there.
Yeah, it was fun. Oh, yeah, with the band that we just heard.
It was like a really great venue.
Actually, who's from Portland.
You think it's meant to be like a tea kettle?
I don't know.
Or just
a shriek? I didn't ask them. I got so sick of people asking about my old band name that I think I don't even think to ask other bands about their band name.
Well, okay. So this leads me to a question that I'd like to get into, but it might be a new can of worms. So let's listen to some music. I know you mentioned the second artist that you guys brought.
Oh, yeah.
Let's play that one. Refresh our memory. Who is this artist?
Dear Nora? Yeah, it's Dear Nora. So it's our friend Katie Davidson. She was living in Portland for a while, and she just recently relocated to Joshua Tree. She came out with a record called Skull's Example last year, and it's really lovely, and I brought my favorite song from it.
What's the name of the song?
Oh my God, what is the name of it? I just know the track number.
that shows that you listen to the whole album.
It's really different than 311 or
That's good.
Nothing.
People
like
don't like 311. I understand that. I definitely understand that.
Yeah.
So the song is called Morning Glories.
Morning Glories, yeah.
Oh. I remember the place where I was born, where the morning glories twine around my door at early morn. I've forgotten how long I've been away, but I'd like to wander back again down the lane to yesterday. I want to wake up in the morning where the morning glories grow, where the sun comes peeping in, where I'm sleeping and the songbirds say hello. I long to schoolhouse on the hill, and I wonder if the kids are climbing up there still. I can picture that dear old swimming pool and the afternoons that I spent there when I should have been at school. I want to wake up in the morning where the morning glories grow, where the sun comes peeping in, where I'm sleeping and the songbirds say hello. I long to wander in the wild wood where those rippling waters flow, and go drifting back to childhood where
so I don't know if you guys are game. Like, you know, hopefully we're kind of loose now. But we do this segment on the show called License Plate Detective.
Okay.
And essentially, Andy, these are real life vanity plates that Andy's seen out in the world, but he can't quite tell what they're supposed to be.
Some of them are
so
weird.
It's really
some
just
of them
a, strange. A no bad answers brainstorm about what some of these license plates might actually mean.
Yeah, that's okay.
We all play a little bit of detective. Why no not? Wrong answers. Nothing
Except
too gross.
Really wrong answers.
Nothing too gross to assume that people would pay to advertise on their own vehicle. So, you know, don't feel restrained by the FCC in this particular case. Andy, what is the first plate?
This one, I love this one. It's WE, the number 2K.
We2K.
We2K.
Oh, we2K. I don't know why I made like a revelatory sound because I don't know. I don't know the answer. But is it like Y2K?
I think it's like a Y2K reference where they were like, oh, you remember Y2K? Now
we2K. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's, I think it's like, I think it harkens back.
Oh, no, no. It's We Toke.
Oh.
We Toke.
The weed versus play.
Yeah.
We took. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. That's good detective work for a rookie.
Thank you.
That is an open
beginner's
and shut
luck.
Case.
Rookie's luck.
Also, or kind of a bold move.
These might be like kind of like Young Immortals, and it could be We 2000, and it's an age declaration.
We 2000.
Okay.
If you imagine the two spelled as TWO, it'd be like,
Yes.
Oh, whoa.
It's We Too Woke.
We Too Woke.
That's a stretch.
Plus, it'd have to be like a brand new plate. I don't know if you caught the, you know, when it expired, but how long has woke been in the lexicon? 2 years? 3 years? It's a relatively fresh word.
Can you be too woke?
You can be.
Yeah, sure. I was too woke on 4th of July.
But I think in that case, it would mean... I think it would be more like oh, too cute. That's what they mean. Not like more woke than you need to be. Just like, oh, that is too woke.
If you really want to like dissect the sounds, maybe it has to do with something like Ewok? I'm also looking at a Star Wars picture, so maybe.
Also, Alan's a linguist.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is good. I'm a linguist. You're like the mind hunter of license plate detective.
Yeah, maybe that's why I got
this. You can really profile people here. So I think you're definitely right about Wetok.
Yeah, that's probably it.
And
right?
Again, you know, just asking to be pulled over.
And not this a great Portland, move. Right?
Or these are people. Yeah. These people can see the Matrix, and they are in fact 2K.
Mm.
If you have like, okay, let's go to the next one.
Okay,
because
I really like this one. It was just do CPR, D-O space CPR.
Mm-hmm.
Do CPR.
So is this person just like really pro CPR, or do they?
They're like
just do you see me? Do CPR.
Just do, yeah, just do it. Don't be scared. Don't be scared of lawsuits. There's a lot to unpack there. There was a law that was passed recently, I think, that absolves Good Samaritans who want to do CPR from any kind of liability if something goes wrong.
Is that Oregon law?
I don't, this is like just, I read
intergalactic.
I read too much stuff and it just turns into a mash in my head.
So now
I don't
have to hesitate when attempting to save someone's life.
Exactly.
They don't have to be paralyzed by fear over a civil suit of some kind.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've heard when you do CPR the right way, like you really fuck people up.
Yeah, you break sternums and break ribs and stuff like that.
Yeah. You gotta like manually beat the heart.
That's yeah.
Right. You have my permission, world. Do revive. Were they a reckless driver? Did they seem likely to need CPR?
Yeah, all over the place.
No seatbelts in that thing.
If you see me, CPR on site. Okay?
Yeah.
Don't even look at my well-being. Just give it to me.
I don't care if my eyes are open and I'm talking. Just do CPR.
Yeah.
For the love of God.
This is a CPR fetishist.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
It is now.
Yeah.
If there's a vanity plate about it, Lisa, it is a thing.
With my words.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
You linguist. No,
what have I done?
Andy, what's maybe one more? Let's go with one more.
This one is kind of the jewel in the rough here.
Ooh.
This one is BBROBB.
BBROBB. So
No, no.
I think it's a dirt bike enthusiast. I think it's the noise of dirt bike.
BBROBB.
BBROBB.
B bro B.
It's probably just someone trying to fit all of their kids' initials on a license plate.
You're right. It probably is. It's probably Big Billy and Rwanda and and Bobby Bills.
Or it's be a bro baby.
It could be.
Be a bro baby.
Be bro baby.
Be bro baby.
Do CPR and be a bro baby and you're set. Yeah.
I can't believe that the bro baby isn't some kind of product already. Like, it's either bro clothes for babies, or it's like a bag that holds like hair gel and sunglasses and other bro accoutrement.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Well, no.
The bro baby. We got one more? You got one more? Okay. All let's right. go out. Let's go out with a win here. Let's solve a crime.
This one's pretty
good. We
have good.
A cold case.
Dr. JC3. Is this Dr.
Whoa,
Jesus?
Oh, this is the third coming of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And he's a doctor this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Dr. Jesus.
Wow.
All three of them.
Oh, my God.
Or maybe it's Dr. Jesus' third car.
Is it like a retelling?
His fleet.
You know how Jesus in the Bible was a carpenter? Is doctor for a future Jesus kind of like the carpenter of, he's just from a simple place? Just a doctor. Just a DDS, you know? Maybe a physical therapy person.
It also could be Dr. John Connor, the third.
Oh,
He's come back from the future to save the Terminators. This time he's pro-Terminator.
Or the fact that John Connor is existing in our time and is a doctor means that the Terminator apocalypse never happened.
Yeah.
Like, we won.
Mm-hmm.
Because he just became a doctor and he doesn't have to save the world.
Or could that JC3 be Juice, and it's Dr. Juice?
Like JCE, like the three is a, it's
it
like
doesn't
the JCE was taken, so they're like, well, just do a three. And,
he's a three. It kind of looks like an E.
Kind of looks like an E.
There's already a Dr. Jace, so
yeah, right.
All we've
right.
got is all Dr. Juice can do is flip that three around.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably right. Dr. Juice, token and juicing. That's a good round.
We took.
You guys are good to have on the case. Thank you for indulging that game, which I would say works 34% of the time.
That's it. That's. I mean,
yeah.
It's.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Like
so thanks for
that's
playing.
Impressive amount of vanity plates to notice.
I do a lot of driving.
Just a lot of people pissing away a lot of money for no reason.
I apologize if you're in the back seat of my Lyft driving and I have to pull over to write down a license plate, but it's got to happen.
What's your Lyft driver rating?
Oh, man, I'm like a 4.95.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. Yeah. I don't got that 5.0. I would have a 5.0, but one old man was like, what's the best rating? A 1? Oops. And he fucked me all up.
Can you give him a rating back? Is that how
it works? He's number 1.
Yeah.
When has one ever been the best of something?
Star. When has one star?
Yeah, one star. Exactly, one star. When there are five possibilities, why would one be the best one?
I don't know.
Did he just arrive on the earth?
You should pull him over and just say, get the hell out of my car.
I think he was using his old man ignorance to really be like, fuck you. You gave me a shitty ride.
What's your banter style? Are you a big talker? How do you handle it?
I mean, if you get in my car, we're probably going to talk about DMT. Honestly,
that's just straight in. You just go straight in.
Yeah, like how do you feel about the spirit molecule? And they've got usually people have a lot of stances.
People have things to say, huh?
Well, I found if I don't start talking about something crazy, like right off the bat, they're going to ask me how long you've been driving for Lyft, and they're going to ask me about my kids, and then they're going to get out. And I just tell everyone about my kids. I tell the same story 100 times. So, you know, I don't want to do that. So I flip the script.
Is putting headphones
about Bob
on
Marley's band?
Ooh, right.
Well, no, if nobody gets in my car and doesn't talk. One time, a lady got in my car and was like, "I just had mouth surgery at the doctor. I don't want to talk." And then she talked the whole way home.
Well, because she's high as fuck.
I take naps like half the time. I get in the car. I'm like, "Hey, thanks for picking me up. How was your day?" And I'm like, "Well, if you don't mind, I'm gonna close my eyes."
Mm-hmm. You say that? You go ahead and say, "Hey, I'm shutting this down right now."
Yeah,
that's good. I do like that.
I'm like, "Hey, I'm kind of tired," because most of the time when I take a lift, is because I just want a nap before work.
Yeah,
That's amazing that you can nap in a car.
Yeah, I mean, even amazing. If I don't fall asleep, I just like I just shut down for like a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm so envious of that.
I fell asleep in the back of a taxi once after a company Christmas party, so I was pretty loaded. And he basically just drove around until it was like $100 cab fare, and then dropped me off at home, which I thought was pretty scummy. But I don't think Uber drivers would do that.
Well, they can't do that.
I think they'd be arrested.
You have to agree. You agree to the price before.
That's right. There's no incentive.
There's no incentive
Smart.
To do that.
They figured it out.
That's not, what's the word? Endorsement of that economy. But you're a driver, and I use Lyft, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Do you do both?
No, I just do Lyft. Mm. It's just easy. It's easier. Mm-hmm.
The earbuds in or the headphones would be a deterrent, but I find when I'm wearing mine, people just plow right on through. Just they'll talk to me no matter what.
Yeah, I can usually tell within the first couple of like sentences whether this person wants to talk to me or not, and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
I'm still going to talk sometimes to myself in an awkward way.
You're going to just do it. You're plowing ahead.
Yeah,
I like it. I wonder what I would think if I didn't know you and I got into your Lyft.
Sometimes if you get into my Lyft, I'm like, you guys like the song Sandstorm? And we rock that shit
wow.
the entire ride, like real loud.
It's nice to have it's nice song? To have that up your sleeve.
You know it.
The most famous European techno song of all time. Yeah.
By Darude.
People get pumped up.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you guys should cover that one. Just the percussion.
I don't know if I know it.
It's like just total, like, Euro techno trash.
Yeah. I think they probably played at soccer games.
He just died. Or he died a few years ago, right?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Is that right? No. Okay. I don't want to start a rumor on the podcast. But
no, this is great. That's good for us.
I thought that he died and they, I don't know.
And they played that at his funeral.
I think they just play it in his memoriam now.
Just like constantly.
Clubs and people are like,
Well, speaking of jams, I think we got time for one more song. Andy, you got
one
the floor.
You got something
hot for us?
This one, all you people in the Midwest that are freezing right now, don't worry.
Stay inside.
I know, it's so cold there.
Old I heard the high in Chicago today was -14.
No, dude.
A balmy -14.
No, they're saying in parts of the Midwest right now with the wind chill, it's -41.
Yeah.
With the wind chill.
Yeah. I saw something about -60 with the wind chill yesterday. Anthony's family's there. Well, and E is there.
Yeah.
Man, their drums probably went out of tune by now.
Yeah, Meredith has a drummer for E. She has a hot tub and she posts on Facebook. She's like, anyone wants to come over and like survive in the hot tub with me?
I'd be scared to go from the hot tub to the house.
I know, right?
That's fucking cold.
I think Hot Tub to the House is my new mixtape title.
Yeah.
Well,
speaking of mixtape, this one's going to warm all you people in the Midwest up. Old Grape God just came out with a new mixtape today.
Who did?
Old Grape God. He's a rapper from Portland. Oh. A very experimental and kind of just like nobody else is doing what Grape God is doing.
Grape God?
Yes. Wow. He's a time traveler.
He told us that he writes flow and lyrics independent of the beat. So there's a lot of kind of like phasing in and phasing out. It's very interesting.
Huh.
He just came out with a new mixtape called Time Travel 444, Time Travel Mixtape Volume 1.
Wow.
And man, Old Grape God has been on his grind lately. He put out, just at the end of last year, he put out a full-length album called Painting that's pretty dope. He's got a clothing line called Dirt Mouth that everyone should check out, where he's got all kinds of cool shit incorporating his artwork onto clothing.
Wow.
And then also he was on the new Tory Ma mixtape. Oh. He's got a couple tracks on that. The one that just got leaked called Soul Trash. So that's pretty rad. But
big 2019 so far.
Yeah, big 2019. And he says that this is just part one of a mixtape series that will be coming out throughout the year.
Sweet.
Wow. He's got production on here. He co-produced this album with Party on Mars, and it's got all kinds of great people on it. Soup Dread, Snugsworth, Skelly Skell, Ripley Snell, Estee.
Are you going to play that now?
Awesome people. So yeah, I'm going to play a track off of this called A Factory, featuring Grape God, Soup Dread, and Snugsworth.
Sweet.
Finna turn the crib to a factory. Warhol ain't got a shit on me. I'm riding. Yeah, I'm riding. Cause I got a couple sleeves up my sleeve. You know what you know about a time, know me. You don't even know what you marijuana be. The wind cries CBD. I'm hiding inside the best dressed body in the room. Quite obviously, not trying to be obviously on shrooms. The comedy resumes and the misery ensues. The company I choose ain't never held money they couldn't use. I blew a fuse like a birthday candle. Fake friends are just fans. Hell is a state of mind. Who you wanna play? Who you wanna portray? You must stay, but I ain't got the time. I'm proof the prince never died. Proof the prince never died. Finna turn the crib to a factory. Warhol ain't got a shit on me. I'm riding. Yeah, I'm riding. Heavy handed cursive. Chevys, vans, and hearses. All that shit I don't got. Give me the worst urges. But I'm never greedy about it. Make a beat tape and a CD out of it. I'm paranoid on the evening out of it. Wanna shoot some shit when the streets crowded. Nah, I'd rather smoke weed about it. Never had a weekly allowance. I'm for if you had a spirit. Police will likely beat it out you. Reminiscing, dreaming drowsy. Steve Hash and his beamer cloudy. Fuck what you think about me. Hit the car to go in finna lease an Audi. Finna turn the crib to a factory. Warhol ain't got a shit on me. I'm riding.
That was some new Old Grape God.
Old Grape God. Time Travel 444 mixtape. Pick that up.
Very cool. Very cool. Glad that he's having some success. Mm-hmm. And everyone should check him out for sure. So, you guys, what's the appeal of the experimental kind of music to you? Why are you drawn to the kind of music that you make?
Is it experimental? I guess it's not tied to...
instrumentation is experimental.
What I would say is it's very accessible for what it is, but it's a kind of music that I don't think a lot of people are exposed to very much
of. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the arrangement-wise, it's pretty daring, experimental. It's not standard. We play with different... the arrangement stuff is kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever want to just like swap it all out and just do all guitars?
Never.
All basses.
I mean, for a while, I was really wanting to play in a rock band alongside this band. And I do have that craving from time to time. Mm-hmm. I kind of get it out when I'm teaching drums and just like I just was right before I came here, I was like playing a bunch of Cure songs with my student.
Oh,
just
really?
Like,
you got to tell me
like,
which
and I just
home.
Like took the freedom of just like going crazy. We were both just like rocking out. So I get it out at in that context, but I don't know. I guess it is kind of experimental. I know I was drawn to do percussion ensemble music because I fell in love with the idea when I was in a percussion ensemble in college, and I was like, I want to write shit for a group like this. And I like getting weird and even arrhythmic at times and stuff.
I think we really like to mess with like dovetailing different rhythms together, yeah, and seeing, yeah, how that works, like kind of building rhythms onto each, yeah, kind of stacking them and seeing if we can pull it off,
and using the drums as melodic instruments, yeah, as harmonic instruments, as obviously the rhythm. Yeah
There's one song we have called Da 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 that's basically we wrote it from just some recordings we did in the basement, and I just heard a bass line in the drums, and I was like, that's the bass line. It's really simple. It's two notes, but it, like, mm-hmm, you know, over four measures, it forms a bass line. And so that was like the basis of the song. It was cool when you can kind of pull things out or find things that work in a percussion, like, yeah, in a percussive way that usually would be done using, yeah, like pop, more like a pop instrument ensemble or something.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not a very lyrical person, so this, like, writing like this makes total sense for me. I've always wanted to be a composer, so I'm like, this is the way I fell into it. Makes sense.
You talked about this a little bit, but when I think of composition, especially when it doesn't have lyrics associated with it in any way, it can feel very thematic, but it seems to be that, like, the listener drives a lot of the impression. There's a lot of, I guess, projecting what I would be thinking I'm hearing onto what I am hearing. Do you give any thought to what you hope someone takes away from the piece? Because since you're talking about environmental issues, or you're inspired by environmental issues, how do you convey the right meaning to someone without lyrics?
Yeah, it's funny because it's kind of like, the feeling that's conveyed in the song is a result of me being in a place and then that going through the filter of my brain and my musical brain and then coming out, and I can't expect someone else to have, right, that same association
to
with
follow
the sound.
That journey, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so, like, it's not really through that. It's more like through, if they read the liner notes, or if they hear me say something in a concert, or if they're curious about the title of the song, to be like, oh. And for some people, they've told me, they've been like, the songs we wrote in the desert were based, mm-hmm, on the feeling of the desert. And people will say, that does sound like the desert to me.
Yeah.
Some people will just be like, I like that song, and I'm happy with that. Like, either way, like, mm-hmm, the environmental message or the context, the inspiration will get across to some people, and some other people will just like the music. And I'm happy with either of those outcomes.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's people who won't like it too.
Yeah, and there's those fools. Just kidding.
For you,
for you fools.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, this is a great forum for calling out the fools.
Yeah,
because our audience is half fool, at least
half fools,
and we court the fools. So
hey,
but we also chastise them.
Is that what that is? Is that what that stands for?
That's actually Andy's last name.
The F is for fool.
Do it for the fool. This is a reminder. Right. Mm. Without some of the bigger issues and without, like, your environmental work and the background that you have, would this particular band exist?
Well, Matt, was Matt Hood the first song that you wrote?
No, I wrote a song for Secret Drum Band in 2006 because I just wanted to write for percussion ensemble, and it was for Lady Fest in Olympia and had nothing to do with soundscapes or environment.
Mm-hmm. You just wrote a piece.
I just wrote a piece.
Okay.
I feel like I would have done this, mm-hmm, anyways. I've just been, like, striving for a long time to figure out how to combine my efforts, and this, like, came together really slowly. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay, this is how this makes sense. So maybe I would be doing, I think I would be doing it anyways. Mm-hmm. I could see, like, maybe if I had gotten a job as a full-time ecologist, I could see myself composing for percussion after work still, and maybe not doing it this way, but it's become the outlet for all my interests combined, and then also an outlet for me and Ellen to collaborate together on compositions. It's like many, yeah, different ways, and it's not like every song has to have an environmental theme or anything. It's just a lot of them do.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like the project has You know, it's got you guys as core members, and Lisa, you're kind of your founding vision. But otherwise, it's sort of got kind of a permeable edge. It seems like kind of an indistinct edge to it. So when it's something that can evolve and change over time, do you ever think of what the future looks like? Do you ever kind of track a course? What kind of ambition do you have about the direction that you're heading in?
Yeah, well, we just made this purchase the other day that's going to kind of
shape
things a little bit.
Yeah, we went into Revival, the drum shop, where Lisa also teaches. And we had our mind on a really small set. We're like trying to find a tiny set for tour, like three-piece, tiny kick drum, tiny toms. So not tiny, but just smaller than usual. Just something good to throw in the van. But we ended up buying the exact opposite.
The biggest one they had.
We bought one with a huge kick drum.
A seven-piece, eight-piece drum set?
It was seven-piece, so six toms. And a huge kick drum. The kick drum we wouldn't take on tour.
No.
But the toms are, they don't have heads. There are five of them.
They don't have bottom heads.
Yeah, they don't have bottom heads. They're headless drums.
They're concert toms.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And the idea of drums.
What's that?
They're just the idea.
The idea of drums, yeah. Theoretical.
But they take up the same amount of space.
Yeah. But, no, but you can nest them. You can, like, put them in each other because they don't have bottom heads. So, yeah, it was just kind of...
And there's this whole range of colors and tones, so we could get, like, even more, even crazier on the melodic side of things.
And they sound really good, so yeah, that was really kind of a windfall for us.
So it was, like, a better move to buy these bigger, like, more...
Yeah.
We think so.
Wider range of drums.
Wider range of tones. One of them's small, one of them's 8 inches, and so we could replace out most of the toms we've been using and instead with all these toms that sound very different from each other, whereas before we were like, tom, dom,
you know, it sounds like dom.
And so, like, our live performances weren't fully capturing our recordings as much as maybe they'll
And we haven't played. This was just this last weekend, so we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
I think we will sound even better.
So that's happening. And then as far as personnel, we do cycle through people, and it's more like it has to do mostly with, like, who's available to go on tour. Every time we have a tour coming up with, the personnel shifts a little bit based on who's coming on the next tour, basically.
But we, we have a really strong player, Zanny. She's fantastic.
Yeah,
she's not able to come with us, but luckily we have another fantastic player that's gonna
and she's based on
her.
The East Coast, Leah.
Yeah, she lives in Massachusetts now. But yeah, I'm really happy with the lineup right now.
Brian Mumford's been playing ambience with us, and he's
great.
He's a genius.
He's really dragging an ox through water. That's his project.
Oh,
I don't know if you guys have you guys heard that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing ambient stuff with us, and he'll be doing. Opening some shows.
And he's been playing on and off with us for years. He's on our album.
Yeah, he played in Jackie O, and he played he's played in Sunfoot.
Will you ever incorporate one of those, like, collegiate marching band sized bass drums?
I used to, when I was in the marching band, that's what I played.
Yeah.
Well, now we have we own a 24-inch bass drum.
We could just get
now.
A harness for it. We could do that. But that's not even one of the big ones. The big ones are like fucking 36 inches or something like that. They're huge.
Yeah, we generally tend towards, like, trying not to have enormous things so that we can...
Yeah, it's wildly impractical. I think it would be awesome the next time you guys are playing in a museum or an outdoor festival.
We did think about getting kettle drums, like timpani drums.
I was going to say, the timpani is my other... Yeah. That's my other favorite percussion.
I would love to have some timpani. I had a music residency at Banff in Canada recently. I did a music residency there, and I had four timpani in my studio.
Wow.
That was
Whoa.
So cool.
Did you just like overuse them? Just timpani on everything?
There are timpani on almost every piece I wrote there. Yeah, and now I'm just going to have to play that on a drum pad.
On an 8-inch tom.
We're on an 8-inch tom.
And you guys are in the studio now working on some new recorded material.
Yeah.
How much is like your process in the studio about experimenting, and do you do kind of writing in the studio, or is everything pretty
we
dialed in
before
really
you really done writing? We do experimentation with sound, but not really with the arrangement or the writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We experiment a lot with sound, and so we just want to have, like, a lot of options to play with. So we're like, record one part with, like, three different different instruments or found things that are in the room or whatever.
Once we sit down and actually start to do the editing and the tweaking with the arrangement, just to have options as to what works.
And then some like creative, like experimental stuff, I feel like tends to happen like later on when we go to like mix the song. The mixing is actually like mixed in with a bunch of arrangement work, because then like we have some synthesizers, like your bass synthesizer or like the organelle or a whole library of field recordings that we've collected that, and sometimes samples that we can work in and like kind of mess around with. And so but right now we're just trying to get the basic drums.
Yeah, we're just trying to track the drums right now. Yeah, that's where we're at.
Well, that's awesome. Nice. Guys, thank you guys so much for being on the show tonight.
Yeah.
Thanks for having us.
It's super great to have, you know, yet another different kind of music that's happening here in the Portland area.
Cool, thanks.
Represented, so we appreciate it. You guys are in the studio now. You guys are hitting out to the East Coast for a tour coming up. Yep. So lots of exciting things on the horizon. Anything on in the works here in the Portland area where people could check you out? Or is that shows, a little bit down the road?
I'm playing a show on the 31st, but that might be before this podcast is being...
Well, people probably had a great time. I think I think we won't be able to catch you for that.
It was a real turn.
Playing a duo with Sarah Lund. It's called These Drums Kill Fascists. It's a drum duo.
Oh, okay.
Sarah Lund, who played in Secret Drummer for many years and probably will again one day.
Sarah Lund from Unwound.
Unwound.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And where can people keep up with what you guys are doing? What's the best way for them to
SecretDrumBand.com?
Is that right?
Or SecretDrumBand.Bandcamp.com?
Yeah, there's some great
stuff. So either one of those websites.
We're not hard to find on
we're on SoundCloud. We're on Bandcamp.
Facebook.
Maybe Instagram too.
Yeah, you can find us.
Yeah, you guys are out there. Secret Drum Band. Awesome. Yeah. Well, Alan, Lisa, thank you again for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. Cool.
And thank all of you for sticking around for this episode. We're glad you joined us. Hope you had a good time. We know you heard some good music. If you do like what you hear, the easiest way to tell other people about it is to subscribe to the show on iTunes, leave us some comments, leave us a few stars, and leave that trail of breadcrumbs. You can also reach Andy, Nate, and myself via email at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That is HAUTE. Garbage Podcast. Andy, it's that time. It's the magic hour.
Ooh.
What are we going out on tonight?
Ooh, you've reached the end, listener. Prepare yourself for a tasty treat. No, it's just weird. I'm not going to do it that way. This is a fantastic band.
No Vincent Price for you.
If we're going to do cool ass fucking female drummers in Portland, you cannot leave Palo Verde out of the equation.
Yeah.
This is a band I fucking love. This is off of their release from 2011. If you don't know Palo Verde, this is LKN on drums and Tricia, I think it's Kleinknecht. I'm probably murdering that last name. I apologize. On guitar. And everything they ever recorded was completely spontaneous and on the spot. They never wrote anything. And then their live shows just felt like it's like heavy, sludgy, improvisational, like post rock, you know? And it's just awesome. It was really good. And this is from their album Zero Hour that came out in 2011. The song's called Evening Shadow.
Wonderful. Cool. Well, for Lisa and Alan of Secret Drum Band, for Nate and for Andy, this is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage.